Thomas Carlyle wrote in the last century that history is the story of great men. And that was the sort of thing you could write about in the last century and get away with it in a way one couldn't do in our own generation. If we read about great men today, very often their faults are being exposed. In a way, that's a good thing. We need to realize that everybody's human. But also, there's something rather disillusioning about today's world. We're beginning to feel, I think, that people are just forces, or just puppets, rather, in the hands of forces completely beyond them, economic and social forces. And somehow, great leadership seems to elude us. And yet, underneath, I think mankind is hungry for true leadership. Now, Israel, way back in the first century, I think was suffering from this same problem, the disillusionment with leadership. They had a tremendous historical background with many great leaders. They looked back to men like Moses, plucked out from the back deserts of Midian, working with sheep, called to lead a nation, their nation, out of slavery in Egypt to a new freedom. They look back to the shepherd boy David, who again was brought out from obscurity to become a great king and to lead their nation into undreamt of heights of success. But they saw that beyond these men, there was God himself. He was the shepherd of Israel. And they had this lovely picture of God leading them as their shepherd. And the vision hadn't died down, it had gone on. It was grasping something even greater. And the prophet Ezekiel pointed to something even more wonderful. The promise, we read it in the Old Testament reading, was this, that I myself, said God, I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep. I don't think they understood that promise, but they had this vision that God himself was going to lead them yet more powerfully, somehow coming right down amongst them to give them the leadership that they hungered for and needed. But all that seemed long ago. And now their leaders had fallen in battle, or they'd compromised with the enemy, or they'd proved to be false messiahs, or they had become remote and uncaring. And that great vision of leadership was fading. And perhaps there was to be no help for hungry and puzzled and searching humanity. And yet that longing remained, that longing for real leadership. And it was into this situation that Jesus came, making the sort of claims which we have read about from the Gospel. It might be good to turn to that in John's Gospel, chapter 10. So we can refer to some of these claims and look at them in detail. And as we look at verse 11 of chapter 10 of John's Gospel, we see this great claim standing out very clearly. I am the good shepherd. Now see that in the context of the background that I've talked about, this longing for a leader. God himself to come amongst them and grip their nation and lead them in truth and righteousness and love and security. And then Jesus comes along just at the time that this whole vision seemed to be collapsing and fading. And he says, I am the good shepherd. One of the many claims whereby people saw that Jesus was claiming to be God, and a claim which marked him out as someone who was to be the leader that Israel, and beyond that, all humanity longed for. Jesus had the heart of a leader who cared for his people. He was a shepherd to people. He looked at people and he saw that they were harassed and helpless, sheep without a shepherd. And his heart went out to them and he longed to give them leadership. He saw them as frightened sheep, rushing without need in panic, aimless in their hurry, separating from each other as they rushed through the world, shepherdless. And Jesus wanted to bring to people peace in the midst of this panic, purpose to end their aimlessness, love to bring people together and not to scatter from each other, and personal guidance for every individual as he became their shepherd. There were and there have been many other leaders who have sought to give men some strong lead and have in measure achieved it. But the Good Shepherd, the only one who has perfectly fulfilled the longing for leadership that there is in the heart of each one of us, is Jesus himself. So now let's turn and look at this chapter and see why it is that Jesus is the Good Shepherd above all others. We see in him marks of leadership, which others may have a reflection of, but which he's got perfectly. In the first place, we see that the leadership of Jesus is personal. Queen Victoria quite liked Sir Robert Peel as a prime minister, but she couldn't cope with him as a person because he always somehow seemed to address her as a public meeting, and so she complained. We long that people are going to be personal with us. And the trouble with all leaders are that they are so remote and so impersonal. And in this age, more than any other, this age of impersonality, the claim of Jesus to be personal is a wonderful claim. It breaks down really into three sections. Firstly, in verse 3, where we read that the Good Shepherd calls his own sheep by name. Now, our name is tremendously personal. It's our name which marks us out as an individual. And to Jesus, we are each unique individuals. And even if our name is John Smith or Mary Brown, there is no confusion with Jesus. He still knows us by name, and he knows us as an individual. And this is why he is a leader above all leaders. It's amazing. Sometimes when one is talking with people and asking how they've become Christians, one often hears something like this. Well, it was as though the preacher was just speaking to me. Or everything else faded away, and I was just alone with God. That experience is characteristic of our first response to Jesus Christ, because it is as though he has come, and it's just him and us. He calls us by name. John, Peter, Mary, Andrew, Angela, each one he calls us in this church by name. And then in verse 4, we see how he continues to be personal in his dealings with us, not just when he first calls us, but after that. His sheep follow him, for they know his voice. God is always speaking. God is speaking in creation. God is speaking through the scriptures. God is speaking to us every day in our everyday experiences, but we don't hear him. But then when we become Christians, we hear his call. And from then on, we do know his voice and increasingly recognize it and respond to it. It's one of the great things about being a Christian, that now God is personal. When we read the Bible, it is God speaking to us. When we look at the world which God has made, it's him speaking to us. And in our everyday experiences, we increasingly find that God is speaking to us. We know his voice. When we are in the flock, following Jesus, we know his voice. It's so difficult to understand this, isn't it? Difficult to explain, too, to a non-Christian. We don't hear anything with our ears. The sound waves don't vibrate between us and a friend. But we still hear his voice. God bypasses the sound waves. God speaks direct. And the impressions that he makes on our mind and on our heart are quite as distinct as the impressions made when a friend speaks. For we know his voice, and we need to cultivate listening more closely. to his voice. But Jesus becomes even more personal than that. Look at verse 14. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. One of the things we often lament when we sit down and talk with people seems to be how little we know people. We talk with them, we share with them, we meet them every day, but how little we actually know them, what they're like, what they're thinking. This is one of the sad things about our world today, that there are so many people around, and yet so few of us know others deeply. Now, this should not be true of us as Christians, because it's not true of Jesus. He knows us. He knows our personality. He knows our thoughts. He knows our desires. He knows our dreams and our visions and our plans. The knowledge that Jesus has of us is very deep. It goes right into our personality. But then there is something more amazing than that. Not only does Jesus know us, but we know him. Jesus has allowed us to understand something of his thoughts, his personality, his desires, his dreams, his visions, and his plans. Because he speaks to us, we know his voice. Because we know his voice, we begin to understand him. And God is wanting us to understand him. God is not wanting to be a remote God. God is wanting to be known by us. This is staggering, that the creator of the universe wants us to know him, but he does. And Jesus says this becomes true of us once we begin to follow him, once we are his sheep. We know him because he's speaking and because we're listening. And the more we listen, the more we understand, and the more we know, and the more our relationship with him is deepened. There's a story of a minister who, as he went to his church every morning, often used to notice somebody there, a workman, praying in one of the empty pews. Obviously, he just popped into the church on his way to work for a very short time and then went off to work. After a while, the minister noticed that this fellow hadn't appeared, and he managed to find out a little bit about him and track down where he worked and discovered that he was in hospital, so he went to visit him. And the story goes that they talked about God and about life. And the minister asked this fellow, whose name turned out to be Jim, what he prayed about when he used to pop into the church for such a short while in the mornings. And the fellow said, well, I just used to kneel down and say in my heart, Jesus, it's Jim. And then I just used to think and let Jesus in on my thoughts. Then they got talking about the illness that this fellow had experienced. And the minister asked him what it was like when he was very ill and lying there in hospital. And he said, well, it was just as though Jesus came close and said, Jim, it's Jesus. An amazingly simple story which captures the depth of relationship between us and our Creator. We know him, and he knows us. And we should be hungry to know him better. That's why Jesus is the true leader of us all, because he is deeply personal and knows us as an individual. In the second place, the leadership of Jesus is the supreme leadership because it is sacrificial. Sacrifice is the mark of true love, and every leader has to sacrifice to be a leader. Sacrifice time and privacy and energy and effort. That's the mark of dedicated leadership. Now, the leader of mankind, the Good Shepherd, has paid the highest price of all to be the leader. He has sacrificed himself for the sake of the sheep. Verse 11, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And the picture continues of a very typical scene in those days of a wolf trying to break in on the flock, hungry, thirsting for blood, this animal suddenly leaps in amongst the sheep and is going for them, to destroy them and to devour them. And then the shepherd comes to the rescue. And this, says Jesus, is the mark of the person who truly cares, in contrast to other leaders who are not true shepherds. The shepherd comes to the rescue, and he goes in amongst the flock to where the wolf is, and he stands between the flock and the wolf, and the wolf turns on him and devours and destroys him, and the sheep are left in safety. The wolf here is a symbol of evil. It can take shape in many, many forms. And evil turns on humanity and seeks to destroy it. We see this happening all around us. Jesus stood between humanity and evil as the Good Shepherd. He allowed evil to turn on him, to destroy, to devour, and to kill. That is what was happening as he laid down his life and suffered on the cross. Evil was destroying him. He, the Good Shepherd, was standing between the destructive power of evil and all humanity. He was laying down his life for his sheep. When I saw Jesus Christ Superstar, I think the thing that disappointed me most of all was the scenes leading up to the crucifixion. One saw a man who was a great idealist and a visionary becoming the victim of his circumstances. And his world and his vision and his ideal were crumbling all about, around him. Life was catching up with him. He couldn't get away. He was trapped. He was a victim. He was destroyed by his idealism. What a contrast between the truth, what one reads here and elsewhere in the Bible. Jesus says very firmly in verse 18, or in verse 17 to start with, I lay down my life that I may take it again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This is not the cowering Jesus of Superstar. This is the Good Shepherd as he really was, as he walked this earth in history. And he was at every moment in command of his life. He didn't lose his life. He gave it. He was not killed. He chose to die. The cross was not thrust upon him. He accepted it for us. He didn't die for a cause, but he died in place of the sheep, willingly. He died for you, and he died for me. He paid the supreme sacrifice to rescue us from our greatest enemy. And as such, he is the Good Shepherd, the only one who has done this. The third thing about the leadership of Jesus is that it was the leadership of a visionary. But he was not the restless visionary who hadn't found himself, or the anxious visionary seeking an unknown goal. He knew who he was and he knew where he was going. He often told his opponents that. But he wasn't satisfied with things as they were, nor would he let his followers be satisfied with things as they were. Those who followed him, those who became his disciples, were rejoicing in the security of his leadership. They were confident in the shepherd's care. They were rescued by him. And they were led by his voice. And they could have been very satisfied and very content and very happy the rest of their lives following the Good Shepherd, cared for and protected by him. But Jesus brought them another challenge in verse 16. I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will heed my voice. It was a vision of the future. It was a vision of the unfolding church. Those who responded to his challenge became true Christians, became his flock. The first to become so were Jews, long prepared by God to respond to him because they were looking for the true leader. But But Jesus looked beyond the crowd of Jews that already had responded to him. He looked to others. He looked to Gentiles. He looked to future generations. He looked to every country of the world, every time and every place. And he saw others, other sheep, lost sheep, who were not of his flock. Those who followed the Good Shepherd closely have always caught this vision from him. It is impossible to truly walk with Jesus and not to capture this vision. If we have not this vision for others, then we haven't been listening closely to his voice, and we don't know him that well. For the heart that he reveals to us when he discloses himself to us is a heart that longs for others. A heart that is concerned for as many as possible to come to know him. One such person who followed him was Hudson Taylor, who worked in China in the last century. He came back from China after his initial expedition out there, and he tried to communicate to Christians something of the vision for others, which he had received by walking closely with Jesus. One Sunday in 1865, he attended a service in Brighton. He went down there for a bit of a break because he'd been under some strain. And I quote from a biography by Pollock, "As the full congregation rose to sing the last hymn, Taylor looked around. Pew upon pew of prosperous bearded merchants, shopkeepers, visitors, demure wives in bonnets and crinolines, scrubbed children trained to hide their impatience. The atmosphere of smug piety sickened him. He seized his hat and left." He writes, "Unable to bear the sight of 1,000 or more Christian people rejoicing in their own security, while millions were perishing for lack of knowledge, I wandered out on the sands alone in great spiritual agony." He walked down to the shingle, to the narrow strip of sand left by the receding tide. "Well, if God gives us a band of men for inland China and they go and all die of starvation, even they will be taken straight to heaven. And if only one heathen soul is saved, would it not be worthwhile?" And he took his Bible from under his arm and wrote on the flyleaf, "Prayed for 24 willing, skillful laborers, Brighton, June the 25th, 1865. And he wrote, "All was joy and peace. My dear wife thought Brighton had done wonders for me, and so it had." I ended my notes there. I didn't in preparation know how to go on, and time is just about run out anyhow. But how does one follow up a response to the challenge of Jesus for others? In the end, it's not talk, but action. And I think by continuing talking, I could blur the desire for action. One can understand how Hudson Taylor felt he couldn't stay any longer. Although he loved to worship God, at that particular time, his longing for action, to see others join the flock, drove him out to prayer. History doesn't repeat itself exactly. We're not Brighton. We're not a smug Victorian congregation. And our call may not be for China. But we are God's people. And we're rejoicing in our security. We've heard the shepherd's voice. We have been saved from the evil by him. And he calls us to look beyond the flock to others and to offer ourselves to him to go out in search of others. And the communion service before us contains this wonderful combination of security and joy for ourselves and yet hunger and longing for others to join us. And I pray that as we go forward with the service now, this same tension will be with us the whole time. Joy and praise that the shepherd speaks to us and calls us to know his voice and to know him. Joy that he's sacrificed himself for us, and yet an impatience to get out into life and share him with others. Let's just be silent for a moment. We'll remain seated. And let's listen to his voice and respond in our hearts in silence. Lord Jesus, keep our hearts open in a deep response to you. We want to hear your voice and to respond to it all through this service, and to do and be all that you want us to do and to be. Amen.